So,
Plus, huh?
No. I think she probably wanted to give a little explanation, but since
right here,
why don't I just call up those folks who will be testifying very shortly, Jim Shepke, and I have that. Jim, are you going to be the only one that comes up, or is Nan? You're going to come up first. I have Jim. I'm just going to read all the names: Jim Shepke, Nan Heim, Connie Bennett, Abigail Elder, and Bill McGee. And so, Mr. Shepke, if you're going to be first, I'd invite you up.
Thank you.
To begin.
Thank you.
And yeah, I guess we're going to go.
You
weren't
explaining anything first.
Okay. Mr. Shepke, it's going to be all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jim Shepke. I'm director of the Oregon State Library, and I have a presentation for you today. You have the paper copy handed out to you, the same thing that I'll be showing on the screen. Also attached to that paper copy is the detailed prioritization form that that you may want to look at. So that is the last page of the thing. Mr. Chair, my presentation today follows the co-chair's presentation guidelines to the letter, and I'll begin. Just to give you a very high-level overview of the governor's recommended budget for the state library, it's really very much a status quo budget, with one exception to that I'll tell you about in a minute. It's a 4.8% increase to the essential budget level overall. And in the administration program area, I noted that of the 12 agencies, there's only one agency that has a smaller increase in the governor's recommended budget. And in fact, the average for the program, the administration program area, is 12.5%, and our budget is 4.8%, just to put that in perspective for you. It maintains the current staffing level, the current organization. It maintains all the current programs of the state library. The one exception is what I'm calling the budget driver in this overhead, and that is House Bill 2116 is a bill introduced by the State Library Board, and it targets the ready-to-read grant program on evidence-based library best practices, and there is an increase for the program in the governor's recommended budget. So that's the one exception to the status quo budget. So to talk about our performance measures for a bit here, we have 15 performance measures, and I'm going to show you the performance measures by program area. So we're going to look first at government research and electronic services. And our first performance measure is the number of research assistance transactions for state employees. As you can see, we average about 70 of those a day. A research assistance transaction is a response to a request in person, by email, by phone, for information. So we deliver information. It's also delivering a book or a document or an article or something that we get from another library. So all those count as research assistance transactions. And we have some targets that the board has set. And here's where I need to note a problem in the governor's recommended budget, and that is that the targets that were set for three of these measures by the State Library Board were set before we had the most recent data. And so that's why, if you look here, you'll see that these targets look low in relation to the latest data. And that is the case because we didn't have this data when we set these targets in the spring of last year. And Michelle and I have been consulting about this, and I think she may have some recommendations for you to rectify this situation. There's three targets. There's three performance measures that have that same or similar problem. The next performance measure is the percent of state employees registered to use the State Employee Information Center. And this is our website for state government. And I showed it to you in my last brief presentation. And increasingly, our customers are getting their own information off our website. And we're building a website that enables self-service increasingly. And so that's been very popular. And as you can see, one in five state employees are registered to use our website. Our website has all kinds of information. We license 95 different databases from things as general as the unabridged Merriam-Webster dictionary, which I use almost every day, and I think all state employees could make a lot of use of that, all the way up to some very sophisticated databases like the Clinical Pharmacology Database and the Aquatic Sciences and Fisheries Abstracts. So we license all these databases so the individual agencies don't have to, and it saves the state money because we license it and all the state employees can use those. Moving on to cost per state employee contact. This is a new performance measure that we were directed to use this biennium, and you'll see that we were actually able to reduce that cost significantly. And the way we did that is we introduced a new product called Eclipse, which is a daily news service that's extremely popular, and I think we have about 800 state employees that use that. So every day we get a contact for those people that get that service, and so the cost per contact reduced for that reason. Contact, our definition of contact is the research transactions that you saw earlier, the attendance at training and marketing events, all our communications with customers, visits to our website is a contact, current awareness service deliveries, and state document titles delivered to our depository libraries. All those are contacts, and we divide that by our costs, and that's how we calculate this. The next measure is average daily visits to the search engine for Oregon.gov. And we run that, as I told you the last time I talked to you a few weeks ago, we operate the search engine on Oregon.gov. You can see that the average daily visits is growing. We have a problem, though, with these targets because they were set, and then we found out that we actually had some bad data, and we get this data from DAS because they run this on their computers, and they were actually running this on two computers, and it turns out that both computers were counting the same thing. So we had a number that was like 7,000 or 8,000, and that caused us to set these targets, and obviously they're too high.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, Representative Morgan.
Thank you. Does the search engine and the Eclipse and the other pieces reside in the state data center?
The search engine is part of the e-government program, so my guess would be yes, it does reside at the state data center. The Eclipse actually runs on computers at the state library. So we run some small-scale projects, and we don't have anything that rises to the intensity of meeting the state data center.
Well, if I might make a comment, too, I use very often the search engine at Oregon.gov, and I found it to be a great tool to find just about anything that I've asked for.
That's good news. And we actually monitor that daily. So our staff goes in, we look at what people typed in, we look at what they got, and if it didn't work, we fix it because we can actually tweak it. And it's pretty interesting to see what people type into that little box, but it gets better and better all the time. So I appreciate that it's working for you.
Mr. Shep, you're making me nervous though when you're saying you're monitoring it and you're making sure. In other words, what do you don't mean that you're?
That means
saying, oh look,
I've actually looked at this myself. It, you know, we can look in real time what people are typing into the box. We don't know who's typing it in.
I just wanted you to make
right.
a clarification.
Yeah, right. Google does the same thing, by the way.
There's a hacker.
Yeah. So we're kind of a mini version of Google. The next, now we're into performance measures for Talking Book and Braille services. The first one is the number of individuals registered to receive Talking Book and Braille services. You'll see that this measure is kind of flat, and that reflects the fact that we've been struggling with the fact that we use cassette technology for our talking books, and what our many of our customers would like to see is a digital technology. But we get all our books and players from the Library of Congress as an in-kind contribution to the program. So we're waiting for the Library of Congress to deliver the digital talking book. They're scheduled to do that in 2008. So we think that once we get the digital talking books, we can really market this program and market the new technology. And so our targets actually reflect that reality, that the digital talking book program will start in 2008, and we'll see this line start to go up.
President Morgan.
Thank you. This is a program that is really important to the people that subscribe to this service. But I think what all of us are seeing now is that DV or digital is replacing the CDs. And so you're going to be in a position pretty soon where people are going to be downloading onto sticks or onto MP3 players. So what's the discussion around this program and the fact that the technology that the Library of Congress is evolving into is going to be obsolete very shortly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the Library of Congress has actually gone past CD, so at least we're not going to get CDs. We're going to have a little flash memory device that holds the book that you plug into the player, and it should be pretty good. It should be a big improvement. But I need to say we're also already into downloadable audiobooks, and we have a pilot project with a number of other states, and we've created a library of downloadable audiobooks already for our customers, and we have about 300 of our 7,000 customers that are using it. It's not easy for blind people to download books from a computer, so it's not for everybody, but we do have users that are already doing that, and we expect that will grow, and I agree with you, someday that's going to overtake, I think, the Library of Congress program. So it's good that we're already into it, we're already experimenting with it.
So are you going to be in a position where you're going to be handling a number, there's going to be different aspects to the book program, so you're going to have a number of balls to try to keep in the air here?
Yes, Representative Morgan. In fact, we know that a number of our elderly talking book users will want to stay with cassette, because they won't want to go to the digital. The cassettes actually replaced LP records, and it's amazing. The last LP record user, you know, gave up in the 80s, I think. So we know there'll be people that won't want the digital. So we're going to be running a cassette program, a downloadable program, and this new digital program. So we'll just have to do all three because, you know, the customer gets to choose. You know, I mean, if somebody says, I love cassette books, I'm not going to try to talk them out of that. I think that's their choice. So we're gonna try to do that.
No, this is important. This is interesting.
You were saying that blind people have difficulty in downloading audio files. Has anybody grabbed hold of doing some kind of a process that isn't oriented on vision to be able to download something that's sound activated or, you know, some other way of doing it?
Not yet, but I think that's, you know, where we're heading. We're heading for, you know, interacting with the computer by voice and being able to give it commands. But right now, you have to run what they call screen reader software that reads to you everything on the computer screen. And I've watched people do it, and it's pretty difficult. So you have to be pretty adept to do it right now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next performance measure for Talking Book is percent of eligible users who are registered for Talking Books, and this is kind of like the last one. It's pretty flat, but we hope to be able to see a greater percentage of people registered for the service. We're at 13%. And I wanted to point out that the norm, we do benchmark our program against seven other states. And when we do that, with using the latest national data, which is a little old, but it's the best we have, the average was 12%, and we're at 13%. So we're not off the norm, but we're certainly not happy with that low percentage. We'd like to be serving more people, and we hope in the future to be able to do that.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Jensen.
Could you tell me do you have any measure? How many of these are seniors who are losing the ability to read versus those who are
blind? I'd say about 80% of our customers are seniors who have lost their vision late in life. Okay. And that's our typical customer. Our typical customer is in their 70s.
Yeah. So actually, we might expect, expect that this, in light of the baby boomers, starting to experience reality of aging, we might expect we'll have a few more of the consumers here in a year or two.
Yes, Representative Jensen, we think this service is likely to grow very rapidly in the future with, problems like macular degeneration, diabetes, a lot of conditions are going to affect the baby boomers. More performance measures for Talking Books, the number of books checked out per year. Again, it's kind of flat. But as I showed you the last time I was here, we do rank number 19th in the nation in this statistic. So we do a great business. We wish we could see it grow to serve more people, and we have targets that we hope to achieve again when we get the digital Talking Book program going. Cost per circulation is a new measure this time that we went back and calculated it going back quite a ways, as you see there. We actually have the lowest cost per circulation among the seven comparable states that we rate ourselves against. And the main way we do that is through the use of volunteers. We use, in the last 6 months, we've averaged about 25 volunteers a month in this program. And they work the equivalent of 3 FTE. And so the paid staff is 9.5 FTE, and the volunteer staff is about 3 FTE. So that's about a quarter of the workforce is volunteer.
Representative Jensen.
Just a matter of curiosity, Dave, are any of your volunteers here today?
No, sir.
Okay, that's fine. I was just going to congratulate
them. They're across the street.
They're across the street. Well,
they're working.
They're working. Okay. Give them our congratulations.
Yes. They're really excellent. They come in every day. They shelve books. They rewind books. They repair machines. They do all kinds of things. So it's good.
Can I ask you, Mr. Chepkin, how are you so successful at getting and maintaining volunteers?
Well, volunteers are very common in libraries because public libraries have lots of volunteers, and we learned a long time ago that we can do the same. We can advertise for volunteers, and we have a very good response to that, and we get very good, dedicated volunteers. And once they start working in Talking Books, they really, sort of bond with the staff, and they learn about the service and the patrons, and they're very faithful. They come back. We have one gentleman who's 90 years old who I think has volunteered with us for something like 30 years. He repairs machines. So we have very faithful volunteers that enjoy what they're doing. The next set of measures is for library development services. And the first one has to do with the Ready to Read grant program, which I'll be talking quite a bit about. And it's a new measure, and it's the percent of library grantees incorporating best practices in their services to children, because the goal of the state library is to help all public libraries achieve excellence in service to children. So there's lots of evidence that says that there's some real best practices that go beyond the normal services that library provides. And the way we define best practices is outreach to preschool children, the kids that are not, maybe their parents or caregivers are not bringing them to the library. We have to go out and take the service to them. Training for parents and caregivers about early literacy, reading to kids, and having a summer reading program. So we just did a survey and we found out that only 26% of the public libraries do all three of those best practices. So our goal here is to basically double that in the next biennium. And you'll, as you'll hear in a minute, House Bill 26... I just blanked that. 2116 will help us do that. Thank you. The next measure is average daily visits to library-funded databases. At your last meeting, I told you about how we license electronic information databases for public, academic, and school libraries in the state. This measures that, the use of those databases, and as you can see, we're doing very well. Oregonians are really using this electronic information. They're going to their library website and finding the information. So this is working very well.
Representative Morgan?
I think also this points out that how computer use is related to generations, that younger people latch on to the technology and wonder why it didn't become popular last week rather than right now.
Right.
And older people tend to hold on to the technology that they're the most familiar with.
Right.
It's gratifying to me to see this jump in the database uses and also how much money this is saving the local jurisdictions from having to individually subscribe to these services.
Right. Thank you. The next measure is average daily visits to the library-funded Oregon School Library Information System. And this is a website that we've created in partnership with the school librarians across the state, again, so that every school can use one, you might call it a virtual library, instead of having every school having to reinvent that for themselves. So this is a website that has the licensed databases. It has a lot of other great information to help K-12 students with their research. And as you can see, the use is very good. The next one is average daily visits to the library-funded LNET e-reference website. And I told you about this last time. This is our reference service that's available 24/7 on the web. You can connect with a real librarian either here in Oregon, or we actually work with a network of librarians across the country. You can ask a question using chat technology. The librarians find the answers. Usually it's on the web and they push the website to your computer. So for people that really have difficult questions that they can't answer using Google or some other easy way to get the information, this really works well. So we increased the use 80% just in the last year. About half our use is from K-12 students, and the biggest use is from middle school students. This really, they take to this, without batting an eye. So we're really pleased about that. It's been a great service to students. And we hope to actually add instant messaging to LNET in the future, and we think that'll really even make it more appealing to students in the future, because they can put the library on their buddy list. That's what we hope to see.
So, Matt, that would be instant messaging between library staffers and the people that were trying to find the answer, so they could actually have a dialogue about what they were reading. And, wow, great idea.
I mean, the chat works the same way. You type in the question and then you're interacting. But you have to go to the website to do the chat.
Mm-hmm.
With instant messaging, the LNET could just be on the list of the buddy list, and any time, a student wants to ask a question. It just make it that much more convenient, I think, for students.
Mm-hmm.
The next measure is, let's see, okay, the percent of competitive LSTA, Library Services and Technology Act, grant dollars awarded annually to build capacity in unserved and underserved parts of the state. And our target is actually a little lower than the actual, and that's because we've really been investing very, very heavily in this, in groups like the Lynn Library League that Senator Morris might have heard of. There's a group in Lane County called the Lane Library League. We're actually working in Lynn, Lane, Clatsop, Columbia, Union, and Wheeler counties right now to plan to extend library service to people that don't have library service today. So we're really making a commitment to this. So the target is lower because we think some of these efforts are either going to be successful or not, but we think a 25% investment in this is still very significant.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the safety net funding issue with a number of the rural counties, there already are moves in several counties to shut down their county library systems. Is this an issue that's on the state library's radar screen, and what are the discussions that you're into?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, this is very much on the radar screen. Our board spent a lot of time talking about this at our last two meetings. We've actually taken some of our federal money, and we've hired a consultant, and we've made that consultant available to Jackson, Josephine, and Malheur counties. I think at our next board meeting, we're going to extend that offer to Douglas County because the situation is really no different. I was down at a meeting of librarians in Southern Oregon just about a week ago. I met with one of the county commissioners in Jackson County to hear firsthand about their plans. So we're very, very engaged with this, and we're going to do everything we can to try to make sure that if libraries do close, that there's a plan to reopen them just as soon as we can. It's very, very tragic. I went to the new Talent Library, which is going to open, I think, in about a week. Brand new, lovely, beautiful library in Talent. And it'll be open 6 weeks, and then it'll close on April 6th. And so it's hard to believe when I toured that library. The next measure is actually brand new, and we haven't been able to do our baseline survey, but we're planning to do that in the next few months. So I apologize that we couldn't bring you a better data and targets for that one, but we'll be doing that in the next few months. The last performance measure is our customer service performance measure, and it's a combination of three unweighted surveys of customers in all three program areas. And as you can see, we get very high customer service ratings from our customers. We hope to continue to maintain that in the future. Two of the surveys were done by email. The survey for Talking Book and Braille Services was a phone survey, but they were random sample surveys of all of our customers. Moving on, Mr. Chair, to prioritization. What you see on the next page is the prioritization done by the State Library Board at their December 2006 meeting. And as I mentioned, the detailed LFO form is attached to my handout. I think the fact that Library Development Services was prioritized first and Talking Books third is mostly a reflection of the fact that Library Development Services serves more Oregonians, albeit indirectly, because they're working to improve public school and academic libraries throughout the state. But I think that's probably what resulted in that prioritization. And you can see the criteria that were used by the board in doing that. And then the next slide gives you our 10% reduction option summary. Again, this was done by the State Library Board. We were looking at how to do the least harm to our programs if reductions need to be made. In the general fund, you can see the reduction would be a 10% reduction. It would come out of the Ready to Read grant program. We only have two choices in the general fund, either Ready to Read or Talking Book and Braille services. We actually have an agreement with the Library of Congress to serve everybody who qualifies for Talking Book and Braille services, so it's really not possible to significantly reduce the budget for that program and keep to that agreement. And as you saw, we already use one-fourth of our staff as volunteers, so we have a very tight budget for Talking Book and Braille services. The next area is federal funds, and if we were to reduce that, we would reduce our Competitive Library Services and Technology Act grants, which is the discretionary part of our federal aid program to libraries. So that's how we would, why the board would reduce in that area. And then other funds, we have an assessment on state agencies. That's where most of this money is from. So we would reduce some things in government research and electronic services that you see here on the slide. There's also other funds in our two other programs, and we get other funds in library development. We collect money from local libraries to pay their share of the databases because our subsidy is only 50%. So we had to take some of that. We proposed to take some out of there, and it would mean we'd have to cancel one of the databases. And then we do get donations from our Talking Book and Braille customers, so there's a reduction built into that to 10%. Mr. Chair, moving on to our policy packages, there's only one. It's policy package number 101. What you see on the slide here is the problem that our State Library Board is trying to address, and I'm sure you're all aware of this, that our students are not attaining reading proficiency like we'd like to see. This chart I find very interesting. It shows the history of reading assessments. So all the way back to 1991, we definitely made progress between 1991 and 1997. But since 1997, the results I find to be pretty disappointing. And even in the latest assessment, just a little more than half of our 10th graders test as proficient readers. So the State Library Board wants to do something about this. And what they want to do is continue to enlist our public libraries to work on this problem. We know that that getting more students to be proficient readers is not just the job of our K-12 schools. It's the job of everyone. It's the job of parents. It's the job of caregivers. It's the job of all state agencies that work with this population. So this this policy package addresses that problem.
Senator Bevin? Mr. Shepke, I want to give you an opportunity to expand a little bit farther on that message, because we know not only do you have this policy package, but many of us have heard that the Superintendent of Public Instruction is seeking additional funds for literacy programs for children, actually more for teachers to actually be trained to address the literacy problems of teachers. And some of us have been approached by SMART asking for more potential state funds to purchase books.
Mm-hmm.
I would guess you would argue that probably at least those three approaches plus others are probably necessary to address the problem.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, I think all help is needed in all those areas. What is unique about what we do with public libraries is we target birth to five. SMART is a school-based program. It doesn't begin until kindergarten. The training of teachers is a school-based effort. So I think what really differentiates what we do with the Ready to Read grant program is we're there at birth with a library card to parents saying, here, you know, it's not too soon to start reading to your child, and, you know, come to the library, come to story time. That's what we have to offer, and I don't think anybody else does that, with the exception of Head Start, which we partner with and work very closely with. But even they don't serve, as you know, all the children, and we serve every child 0 to 4, 0 to 5. So that's what differentiates us from those other programs. So what do we want to do? The purpose of Policy Option Package 101 is to implement evidence-based programs in every public library to help more Oregon children become proficient readers. And this is a change to an existing program that's been around since 1993. And what the board wants to do is target that existing program, the Ready to Read Grant program, in two specific areas: early literacy services and summer reading programs. Those are the two things that the evidence shows can have the greatest impact. And they want to restore funding for the Ready to Read Grant program to $1 per child per year with a $1,000 minimum grant. Because right now, the funding formula is such that we have a number of libraries that get very small grants. Some are even under $100. And the board really wants every library to be able to have a project. No matter how small the library, they need $1,000 to have a good ready-to-read grant program. And that's included in House Bill 2116, the change to the program to target it in those two areas and to put in the minimum grant. And then the governor's recommended budget has the funding to restore the program to $1 per child per year and to fund those minimum grants so that you don't just take the money out of the bigger libraries and give it to the small libraries, which would happen otherwise. So you can see the increased cost is $286,006, and that's in the governor's recommended budget. You can see the total biennial cost of the program. We know from our most recent survey of public libraries that our ready-to-read grants leverage $2.24 on average of local effort. So that's what this $3.3 million figure is. We think we would leverage that much support locally to have some really good projects. Let's talk just for a second, you know, to remind you, what does the evidence say? Why do we say this? These are evidence-based practices? And so I've given you a list of some research that early experiences have a decisive impact on the architecture of a baby's brain. You've heard this, I'm sure. Development of literacy is a continuous process that begins early in life and depends heavily on environmental influences. Reading aloud to children is the single most important intervention in developing children's literacy skills. We've known that for a long time. The National Commission on Reading came out with that in 1985. And then research about summer reading. I cited one research study that showed that children in every income group who read six or more books over the summer gained more in reading achievement than children who did not. And that was a long time ago. There have been studies since then. I saw one the other day that said in the summer, on average, children from low-income families lose 3 months of grade level equivalency over the summer as compared to middle-income children who only lose 1 month. So again, summer reading is very important to get these low-income students into the library, get them reading over the summer, give them incentives and prizes, and it really works. We have four ways that we measure the Ready to Read grant program. One of them is the key performance measure that you've already seen, use of best practices in serving children. That's one of our very important key performance measures. But there's three more measures that we use internally to measure this program, and this is our plan to measure and see how successful we can be going forward. One is the percent of children 0 to 4 using the public library in the past year. And this is a question that gets asked in the Oregon Population Survey. We have data for 2004. The data for 2006 just came out about a week ago, and we haven't analyzed it yet. but we should have that number very soon. And the board set a goal to increase that to 55% by 2008. And then the other two, attendance at literacy programs, we have lots of good data for that. Number of children participating in the summer reading program, we have good data for that. So you can see the targets. We want to increase that and really increase our service to children through this new Ready to Read grant program. And just to remind you, I showed you this slide the last time I was here, but these are some of the things that libraries are doing actually with their Ready to Read grants this year. And actually all these projects that you see on the slide would still be valid projects with our House bill once that passes, because they are early literacy and summer reading. So I just wanted you to see those. And I think we have librarians from two of these libraries that are going to tell you more about these projects in a minute. Turning, Mr. Chair, to a little discussion of continuous improvement. We were asked in our instructions for this presentation, I think, to bring you one example of a continuous improvement project. I'm bringing you eight projects that are currently underway at the State Library. The first is the Oregon School Library Information System 2.0. We're totally redoing that website. It's going to launch next fall when school starts, and it's going to be better than ever, and we think the use will even be stronger with the new Oregon School Library Information System. The State Library Process Documentation Project, we have identified 120 mission-critical business processes at the State Library that we want to document, because like all agencies, we're experiencing lots of retirement, and we don't want that corporate memory to leave with those retirees. So we launched a very intensive process to document every one of these processes. And we not only document them, we pilot test them. We give the documentation to another staff member and say, here, we want you to do this using this documentation. And so far it's been very successful, and we expect to wrap that up at the end of May. Another project is the State Employee Information Center redesign. That website is in need of updating, so we're working to do that. The Oregon Authors Talking Book Recording Project. There's many books that are not recorded by the Library of Congress. They don't record Oregon books in general because they're recording for a national audience. Instead of purchasing a state-of-the-art digital recording studio and, you know, trying to figure out how to get narrators, we went to other states that already have that facility and already have those programs in place. We negotiated a deal with the New Mexico State Library, and they're recording books for us, and we're using donation funds to pay for that. I think that the next book they're going to do is actually The Exploding Whale by Paul Lindman, which is a book we get requested quite a bit. Four more continuous improvement projects. The Plinkett Content Management System for Public Libraries Continuous Improvement. We actually host content management software at the State Library that enables public libraries to build high-quality websites, and we host them, so it makes it really easy. The way we're constantly improving that software is we went out and we found three other states to partner with, and we pooled some money, some federal money, with them, and we're working together to continuously improve that software. The NFB Newsline Continuous Improvement. NFB Newsline is a new service of Talking Book and Braille Services. It's a telephone. You call a telephone line, toll-free line, and you can hear that day's Oregonian newspaper. You can hear the Statesman Journal using voice synthesis technology. And you can call them at 7 in the morning and hear the Oregonian over your phone. And this has been something that blind people have been asking for years, and it's very popular. But we want to continuously improve that service, and so we're doing that with our partners. We just added the Register Guard about a week ago, and now we're going to start thinking about the Medford Mail Tribune, I believe. Reading for Healthy Families Project, we're partnering with the Oregon Commission on Children and Families to foster more collaboration between Healthy Start, family support workers, and public libraries. And we're actually going after a grant from the Oregon Community Foundation to help make that tie. That's already happening in a lot of places. We want it to happen everywhere where those programs are working very closely together. And finally, the Oregon Poetry Collection Project with the new Poet Laureate. We thought it'd be great to have a ceremonial office at the State Library for the new Poet Laureate with the most comprehensive collection of Oregon poetry of any library. So we went to the Oregon State Poetry Association. They're going to collect the books. We're not going to spend any state money buying poetry books. They're going to get the books for us, and so it's a great partnership with them and with the Poet Laureate. And one thing I just comment about all these, I think 6 out of 8 of these continuous improvement efforts involve partnering and collaboration. That's the way we do business at the State Library. And that's how we can do these new things without big increases to our staff and budget, is through partnerships. We've learned how to do that. Getting to efficiencies, and this is the last part of my presentation. I wanted to call your attention to a report in the binder on page 131. We submitted a report to the governor last year that documented the efficiencies that you see here, so I'm not going to go through those, but we documented 12 areas where we're either saving money for the state library, saving money for state agencies, or saving money for local libraries and getting efficiencies. So we think we do very, very well in this area. And then I finally want to talk to you about a new efficiency project that is being planned right now, and that is what we call the Shared Federal Documents Depository. If you look at the slide, you'll see that right now, Portland State, or since 1972, Portland State Library has been the regional federal depository library for Oregon. And what that means is that all printed federal documents have been acquired by Portland State Library, which is a huge workload, 11,000 titles per year. And as you can see from the slide, there's a lot of other libraries that collect federal documents too. And last fall, the library director at Portland State visited with me, and she indicated to me that they were no longer able to do this with their funding situation, and we needed to find a new way to collect federal documents in Oregon libraries. So we worked with a group, with the Oregon Library Association, actually, and we developed a brand new plan that's going to be very much more efficient. And this slide shows that beginning this year, the plan is that Portland State, the University of Oregon, Oregon State, and the State Library will actually share the responsibility for getting these federal documents and housing them, and will virtually eliminate duplication, which is something that's probably long overdue. There's no reason for multiple libraries to be getting the same title. So we've split up the federal agencies, and we're all going to be responsible for a certain group of federal agencies. And Portland State, instead of being responsible for 100% of federal agencies, is going to be responsible for 51% of federal agencies. So we think this will be great for efficiency. It will save money at Portland State University. They're right now planning, I understand, for a 6% budget reduction. That's what the library is planning for the upcoming fiscal year, and that's even with the governor's recommended budget. So this will help them do that. We think they'll save at least about $85,000 a year through this sharing. Another change is that the state library has agreed that we will coordinate this program going forward, and we find that we're able to do that. We hired a new federal or a documents librarian who's just fantastic. She has lots of energy, and she we can turn this over to her, and it'll be in very good hands. And we are confident that we can sustain it without coming back to you for budget increases in the future. We think this is a very sustainable model going forward. So with that, Mr. Chair, I conclude my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Shepley. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excellent report. And I really appreciate the itemization of the efficiencies that you're targeting, and especially a compliment to you on your customer service key performance measurement. Those would be enviable in any private sector organization, and certainly within the public sector, I'm sure, as well. I do have some questions, however, with some of the other key performance measurements that seem to be focusing more on usage and demand, and I'm wondering just how controllable that demand is or the usage is for you, and is it truly a key performance measure that is something you can actually influence. Now, if I was thinking in terms of a business, and I was wanting to influence the demand for my product or service, I would have probably a robust marketing and sales program, and then actually would have key performance measurements for those specific activities, and then the result of those activities you would measure the increase or decrease in demand. And I'm wondering how this actually relates to your, you know, your business function, and mm-hmm. can you really meaningfully control these utilization mm-hmm. The utilization of your services?
I think, Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, that we operate on the assumption that the quality of our service will drive the use. And I think that's true in talking book and braille services. If we can improve the quality of the talking books, get to digital talking books, we can keep increasing service at the current level of our resources. Projects like the Oregon School Library Information System and LNET, we have less control of, but you know, we really believe that if we can make those services better and better, that they're just such great services. We think people will use them. So, you know, until we're proven wrong, until those services sort of plateau out and we can't influence them, we think we're influencing them now just by continuously improving the quality of the product. We obviously don't have a marketing staff or anything like that. We have to do it on the product side of things, and that's what we attempt to do.
Just as an observation, the key performance measurements are ones, in my judgment, that you can actually influence and control. And indirectly, you're wanting to influence your utilization by quality. But that connection may be a little bit weak. And it would be my suggestion that maybe in future reviews that the key performance measurements focus more on those issues that you really can control. Mm-hmm. And as I look, you know, just scanning through the efficiencies, I mean, these are great concepts and ideas, and you've already demonstrated mm-hmm. what you can do.
Okay.
And focusing more on the things you actually can control.
Okay.
Now, if you want to put part of your budget into actually marketing, then you can measure that.
Mm-hmm.
You have something you can measure.
Mm-hmm.
But those are just reflections on these
Thank
key performance.
That's
measures.
Helpful. We actually had a lot of work done on our key performance measures. As Senator Devlin knows, he chaired our subcommittee last time, and most of these are new, so we'll see how they work out. And we eliminated some that we didn't have very strong control over. For example, we used to have a key performance measure about the number of children attending literacy programs in public libraries, and the decision was to not have that be a key performance measure because our influence wasn't strong enough. It's now one of those internal measures that you saw for the Ready to Read grant program, but it got demoted for the very reason I think that you brought up, that our ability to influence that really strongly was not that great.
Senator Deppler?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to state for the record partial agreement with my colleague to the right of me here, probably not politically to the right, but Senator Morse, but also somewhat having a belief that actually quality does drive usage. I can remember in past lives talking about libraries and libraries that lost ultimately their ability to add to their collections. And when they lost the ability to add to their collections, their actual usage went down because people went to the libraries to see certain items that they anticipated would be there. And when those items were not there or were not available, they no longer came.
Mm-hmm.
Or, for instance, most libraries, not all now, unfortunately, used to have a very good staff, and many still do, of reference librarians. You know, the aspect of having a reference librarian or not having a reference librarian can make a huge difference in what the quality of a community library is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. I agree.
Thanks, Senator Devlin. Any other questions or comments? Senator Morrison.
Just a process question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is the frequency of DAS? You mentioned that DAS does your data collection and gives you feedback on the reports for these key performance measurements. What's the frequency by which you receive those reports?
They only collect the one for the search box for Oregon.gov. And I believe we get monthly reports on that. And we might even be able to go in and get that data ourselves. But it does run on their hardware. But that one is unique. That's the only one of the 15 that we rely on somebody else's computer to count.
Thank you. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering why the survey results for the customer performance measures are unweighted, especially when you're dealing with some relatively small populations.
I think it was the decision of my board to treat our three programs equally and not to say, you know, this customer group is more important than the other. So it, you know, it essentially says that the three programs are service to state government, service to libraries, and service to blind and print disabled. And my board feels that all three of those customer groups are of equal importance. And to weight the survey, you know, could be interpreted as saying, you know, it's more important our service to libraries is more important than our service to the blind and print disabled. So that was their decision on that.
Mr. Chair, if I don't know.
Sure.
In my private life, I run a market research-based consulting firm.
Mm-hmm.
And in my professional opinion, you wouldn't be placing a value judgment on the population by weighting the data, but it would simply more accurately represent the total population you're serving,
mm-hmm.
if you did indeed weight the totals.
Mm-hmm.
I would also have an interest in actually seeing the results by the subpopulations as well, since that might tell you
sure.
more information about how to best serve your customers.
Okay. I could bring that tomorrow.
I'd appreciate that.
Okay.
Representative Edwards was an avid reader as a child, and he continues. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments?
Just, Mr. Chair, I just want to say Mr. Shepke runs a very tight ship at the State Library and provides a tremendous service to Oregon's libraries all across the state. I love research, just absolutely love it. And if you go away, we lose all that opportunity. You and the archives, you've got to stay with us. So, and he's in, you know, the program, the Ready to Read program, has just done a tremendous job. It's done what it's set out to do, and Mr. Shepke's done a good job of shepherding that through the system. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are you Senator Devlin?
Yeah. Mr. Shepke, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a budget-related question, but not related to your current year budget. I think I'm going to practically ask this of everybody that's got an older building that's on the mall. What's the general condition of that building that looks to be in fine condition on the outside?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, this building is in excellent condition because we had the opportunity in the 1990s to do a total renovation of the building. It was funded with about $7 million, so it wasn't terribly expensive at the time. I'm sure it would be a lot more expensive now. But we spent about 3 years renovating the State Library, which was the first renovation it had ever had since it opened in 1939. So it had been pretty run down. But if you go over there today, you'll see that it's just a beautiful building in excellent condition. And I would compliment the Department of Administrative Services, the Facilities Division, for keeping it that way because, you know, we spent $7 million to renovate it. We rededicated it, I think, in about 2001, and or it might have been 1999. I'm kind of vague on the dates, but DAS has kept it in excellent shape, and that's really a credit to their
that's good to hear.
Devotion. It's just, you know, you can't help but want to keep it nice because it's just a beautiful, beautiful building.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. I think that's the first time I've heard anyone say a beautiful building in excellent condition since we've been meeting on this committee, so I think perhaps this was the time to...
No dead bodies.
I know, that was...
I think it's the nature of the building. It's not on the National Historic Register, but it's register eligible. And so there's just a real... Everybody wants to keep it... Great, and it's just, we love it. It's a wonderful building. Come see it.
Oh, I'm motioning to my committee administrator to steal me out of committee for
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Shepke, for the presentation.
Okay.
Very much appreciated. Very useful.
Thank
and
you.
I'm sure we will continue to use your services and perhaps fund them.
Good.
So.
I'm trying to talk like a waste.
Sorry, no gallows humor from the. I'm sorry, I shouldn't. So, I don't know if there was a particular plan that you had, Nan, either to call up, to have you and Connie and Abigail all come up at the same time. Was that sort of the plan? Can you do that? Okay, so I'm going to ask Nan Heim of the Oregon Library Association, Connie Bennett, the director of the Eugene Public Library, and Abigail Elder, who's a librarian with the Multnomah County Library, is going to come up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Nan Heim, representing the Oregon Library Association in support of Senate Bill 5523. Our members, we have about 900 members in our association, and they are librarians, board members, and volunteers for all types of libraries throughout the state, public school, community college, college, and university. And with me today are two of our members, Abigail Elder from Multnomah County Public Library and Connie Bennett, Director of the Eugene Public Library. And they are here to tell you what they do with their Ready to Read grants. And before I turn it over to them, I just want to add to the praise of Jim Shepke and the Oregon State Library. I've been so impressed over the years with the wonderful collaborative working relationship he has with our members and libraries throughout the state. And Connie has brought with her some materials that they use in their outreach, which I would like to share with you all. We are just loaning them to you, not giving them to you. And with that, I'll turn it over to Connie.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Connie Bennett. I'm the director of the Eugene Public Library, and I'm also past president of the Oregon Library Association. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm speaking to you today on behalf of and support of Senate Bill 5523, the state library budget. I specifically would like to speak to the Ready to Read grant program. Before I go into that, I wanted to help Jim out, Mr. Shepke out just a little bit in his response to Senator Morse about the question of advertising about services as well as working on quality? Because services that the State Library does, such as the cooperative database projects or ELNET, the chat with librarians that we were talking about earlier, are heavily advertised in the libraries in the state. And we're promoting those with the support and help of the State Library for materials. And so there may be a way to measure that, but I wanted to not let him get away without telling you that we actually do market those to the citizens of Oregon.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The Ready to Read program has been in place since 1993, and it is the only state funding that goes to direct service to Oregon citizens through the public libraries. The governor's budget is proposing to return the level of Ready to Read funding to the $1 per child level. Not only are we absolutely in support of this, but the Oregon Library Association and the Oregon Libraries are asking you to consider even increasing this to $2 per child. The reason that we emphasize this important service goes back to the question that Senator Devlin asked earlier about where is it most economical, where do you get the best return on investment in terms of literacy. I'm sorry, Senator Devlin, you got the one in Spanish. There are more in English if you want to look at those. In the handout that you'll be getting in my written testimony, I've included a graph that came from a publication just released by the Urban Library Leagues called Making Cities Stronger: Public Library Contributions to Local Economic Development. There's an entire chapter in this publication focusing on literacy and what it does to economic development in communities. This research was funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Geraldine R. Dodge Foundation and came out at the end of last month. There's a chart in this document on page 10 which talks about the return to investment of in terms of human capital. For each dollar invested, it's much higher return at preschool. It gets lower at the school as you enter school, as you get older and older. The return on investment when it's post-graduation job training or remedial literacy programs is much lower. If you invest in children when they're just learning to read, it ends up compounding itself because the child is prepared to learn. They learn to read, and then they read to learn. It's such a strong connection that the state of California is actually using third grade literacy rates to predict how many prisons they will need to build. The Eugene Public Library last year received just under $18,000 for our Ready to Read grant. Our current program is called Read for Joy, or Gozo de Leer. It is a bilingual program. And the literacy outreach specialist that we hire with grant funds goes out to the homes of newborns with the bag, like you see before you. And these visits new babies and demonstrates reading, shows a parent how to read to their child, talks about the importance of a print literate environment for the developing brain, talks about library services and how they are free to the family, invites the child to come to programs, our laps at baby story times, and in the bag includes a gift to help the child start their own home library. This program is available in English and Spanish. The bags, as Nan mentioned earlier, are not a gift. Those are actually going to go back to Eugene and go to citizens not yet born. And this program is, as we mentioned earlier, part of collaboration in terms of leveraging community funding. Some of this is funded by our Library Foundation. In addition, we work with Birth to Three, Cresar, and the teen parent programs at high schools to connect to these early families and working on emergent literacy skills. Twice a year, the parents come into special programs at the library and just for them and their newborn children, and that helps facilitate library card registration as well.
This ready-to-read program that I've described has been Eugene's program for the last 10 years, and we reach annually 250 babies and their families, which is of which approximately 75 are Spanish-speaking families. Ready-to-read grant funding can really have an impact over the years in terms of collaborating, leveraging funds, working with other agencies. And I'd like to mention a couple of past programs that Eugene originally developed with ready-to-read funds that have since moved into our regular offering of programs supported with local money. One of those is Storytime Express, which goes out once a month to daycare providers and models for the in-home daycare providers story time, how to work with children on emergent literacy skills, brings library books to the daycare for them to use for the month until the next visit, and also brings incentive gift books as, like the ones in these bags. This program reaches 8 providers annually, or 70 children a year, and is part of the regular library program offerings now. And the other program I would like to mention is a collaboration with Head Start. It's Abriendo la Puerta a los Infantiles. It's for Spanish-speaking parents, and it teaches them how to use children's picture books to teach math, science, and literature concepts to their children. It's a 4-week program that parents are involved in coming four times to the library for this Spanish language training, and we do offer it once a year. So, in closing, I would ask for your support for Senate Bill 5523 and a restoration of the ready-to-read grant funding to $1 per child. I thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bennett. Are there any questions for Ms. Bennett?
If then, comment, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Jensen.
I see in there one book they have, an appropriate book for the Eugene Public Library. And on the last page, I think, of the What's on My Head, we've got the little rubber duck.
Good X.
Wow. I have no comment. Which is a good thing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Okay, Ms. Elder.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Abigail Elder, and I have to admit this is the first time I've ever done this. I live in Beaverton, but I work as a librarian and administrator at Central Library, Multnomah County Library, downtown Portland. And I just wanted to share with you a little bit of our experience using our ready-to-read funds. The Oregon Library Association is committed to promoting early childhood literacy through our summer reading and through the ready-to-read. And at Multnomah County, we've been using ready-to-read funds to provide a program that we created and that we deliver called Early Words. Early Words is professional development for child care providers. Either they provide family-based child care in their home or they are center-based child care, or their relatives who care for other members of their family's children, and to help them prepare preschool children for success in reading. So in the last year alone, we offered 72 workshops in English that reached 742 child care providers, some of whom maybe have 3 or maybe have, you know, dozens of children in their center. We also offered early word workshops in Russian, Vietnamese, and we have a 6-part series in Spanish. As a result of these workshops, many of the child care providers have now connected with the library's home delivery program, where we bring books to those child care centers, which is an indication that not only did they attend the workshop, but they're really actively involved in creating literacy opportunities in the daily activities for children in their care. In addition to the number of people who have always been in that, we're really proud that this year we have 34 Russian-speaking child care providers and 23 more Spanish-speaking child care providers who now get that home delivery of materials. Just a real indication that they are committed to providing those activities. A 2001 evaluation of our program demonstrated that the program creates statistically significant changes in providers' attitude about literacy. After attending our workshops, they indicate that they incorporate more literacy activities in their daily plans, including, like, for example,
offering, exposing children to the alphabet, providing children the opportunity to write and to read, and creating like a book nook or a library center in their child care facility. In addition to these direct services that we provide to the child care providers, Multnomah County Library has also been a leader in developing curriculum and training trainers across the state. One result of this work is that the library is now seen as a recognized resource, not just of providing these skills, but also as one of the places where child care providers can get their yearly certification credits, including one of the few places that providers can get credits in Russian and Vietnamese. Very important. In addition to this, to child care providers, we've also started to partner with public preschools and with foster parents. So approval of the Senate Bill 5523 would obviously make a significant difference in the lives of children. It allows the state library to provide ready-to-read grants to public libraries with a funding rate of $1 per child, with a minimum grant of $1,000 per library. And I think Mr. Shepke talked about the $1,000 minimum and why we really think that's important. However, we at the Oregon Library Association believe that increasing the funding rate to $2 per child would do even more to strengthen early literacy and the summer reading resources that we can make available. So I thank you for your support of the State Library and Ready to Read funds in the past, and I encourage your support of this Senate bill. Thanks for giving me the chance to speak to you today. And I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Well, that was excellent, Ms. Elder.
Thank you.
You're like a pro.
So. Well, I really believe in this program, so it's worth it to overcome my nervousness.
Yes, and it's evident. So that's very meaningful to everyone on the committee. So, are there any questions or comments
on this program? Well, actually, just a very brief one. I noticed there's a sheet in here about the value of baby Einstein. And I'll share with you my own personal experience with this. When my grandson was very young, we had a baby Einstein tape that we played on a regular basis. And I think it definitely contributed to him turning out to be a very well-developed 7-year-old. But from my own perspective, it definitely had a negative impact on my ability to be around the TV after watching it about 40 times.
We increase reading any way we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a brief question. Can you give me a sense of how the $1,000 minimum grant might be applied? Percentage terms, how might that money be allocated?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, the ready-to-read grants are distributed to every public library it's a formula that's based mainly on the number of children, but there's also a little bit of the geographical in there to help the rural libraries that serve large geographic areas. But because the funding for this program, which I think is one of the great bargains in state government, has been so low, there are small, very small libraries that get grants that are sometimes under $100. Mm-hmm. And they've actually managed to do amazing things with them. But now that we're discovering some of the best practices, we'd like to establish a minimum grant of $1,000 per library to help them reach more children and do more with the grants. And there is money in this budget to hold harmless larger libraries so that we can bring those smaller libraries up to $1,000, but the other ones stay at $1 per child.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, follow up.
Follow up.
So assuming that, give me an example of it. Can you give me an example of a small rural library who previously received, say, under $100, who now receives $1,000? How do their services change in this regard?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, we estimate, I think, that about 56 out of our 130 public libraries would actually benefit from a minimum grant. And, you know, we have very small libraries all over the state. Places like Agnes and Athena and Condon and Fossil, though it's, you know, pretty, it's been the case in the past that they get grants of $70, $80, $90, $100. And so when the State Library Board thought about this House Bill 2116, we wanted to make sure that if we commit to really making a difference for kids through this legislation, that we can look a legislator in the eye and say it's going to happen everywhere. And we knew that a grant of $70 or $80 or $100 really we couldn't make that commitment. So that's what got the board to think of the idea of the $1,000 minimum grant, which is still a pretty small grant. But in some of these very small communities, we think they'll do a lot. And they'll do the best practices. They'll apply it to their summer reading program, to their, you know, there's child care facilities in every community that the library can go out and serve. Maybe there's only two or three, but that can be done. So we think this $1,000 grant will really work for the very smallest libraries.
Mr. Chair? Perhaps I'm not making myself clear.
Sorry.
Are you asking for a specific example of, for example?
Not necessarily. I just like to know, understand that in a case where a library receives the minimum amount, how, in percentage terms, how would that amount might be allocated? Is most of it going to go towards, you know, labor or materials? I mean, how exactly is it allocated?
Representative Edwards, it's up to every library to apply for a ready-to-read grant, and in that application they have to tell us what their project is and how they're going to spend the money. And so under House Bill 2116, they'll have to either be targeting summer reading, early literacy, or early literacy, and so it'll be up to them to decide whether to buy books, whether to hire a staff person, or just exactly what they would do with the money. We don't determine that. Does that answer the question?
Yes, it does. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Morgan?
Just maybe to give Representative Edwards another aspect to this, I served for a number of years on the advisory committee to a branch library in the Douglas County Library System in Myrtle Creek. And the summer reading program was a huge community focus. And I know for those folks to anticipate that they would have $1,000 to spend on a summer reading program, it would be the biggest thing happening in town that summer for kids. And they would be just mobbed with kids.
That's right. Other questions?
Mr. Chair.
No, he's saying that I should point to you, I think, Representative Jensen.
Yes?
He had his hand up just a nanosecond before I did.
Okay, nanosecond goes to you, Representative Jensen. Yes.
Okay.
Way to be quick.
It's not really to the library here, but one of the things that really perplexes me as we deal with the reading programs and a lot of the assessment programs. And I start out and look at the scores that we have here for the third grade. They're not that bad. Maybe we can do better, but they're not that bad. Mm-hmm. When I get to 10th grade, the same student who was scoring in the 80s is, you know, flunking. If you follow the time frames along with it. And I want to know, you know, is anybody doing anything to try to trace what's happening from the time that the early grades? And I appreciate very much that the importance of starting early on this issue of reading. And if you can get a child reading, then you're very much off on the right track. But what happens? I've wrestled with that, and we'll be hearing a lot more about that when we get to the K-12 budget and the Department of Education and, you know, this sort of thing. But nobody's ever really told me or given me any kind of a good idea of where can we go to, you know, maybe we need to go to the 11th graders, or maybe 10th grade is just a bad year or something. I don't know, but they just seem to fall in the vacuum of some sort there.
If I may comment, My understanding is, one thing that's happening is the test gets harder and harder. And so at the third grade, you're just measuring, you know, very basic literacy. But at the 10th grade, you're measuring reading proficiency, reading to go on to college, reading to get a good job, and it's a hard test. And I think what I've read about the research is the way you get from basic literacy to reading proficiency is you cultivate the joy of reading, which is what your program is. Because that's when kids become good readers, when they read for enjoyment. And that's what the public library is there for. That's our whole focus. And that's what the summer reading program is about, is to hook kids on reading. And schools, I think, have less of an ability to do that, actually, than we do at the public library. So we take that responsibility very seriously. That is what we try to do.
And I fully appreciate, Mr. Chair, the increased abstractness of the testing, the assessments that we're using. But after all, that was what we're supposed to be doing, was taking people that grades one, grades three, or, you know, and moving them through a process. When they get to the 10th or 12th grade, they're supposed to be able to. So I still think we're missing something here. Now, maybe the assessments are poorly designed. I suppose that's a possibility. But I'm not comfortable with that answer. I'm not comfortable with the fact that I'd like to see these kids grow a little bit as they're going through the educational process, and maybe there's something in the libraries to focus on a little bit older students to this is not an indictment of anything. It's just something that has puzzled me, perplexed me. And until such time as we cross that bridge and get those 10th graders and 12th graders to the level that they're performing, what I think is up to par, we're always going to have trouble in our educational systems.
Big challenge. Sam Morse, did you?
Thank you. Just to tell Dave, then I do have a question. I think the employer community would certainly agree that grade level, meeting that grade level, is not being met. And so, no matter how you cast the test, that grade level is not being met. Major issue. On behalf of Senator Walker, and this is a question that I could probably be embarrassed asking, but because I don't know the background behind it, but she, as she left, and she regrets that she was double booked here, the one time there was a program to read to dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're nodding your head. That's a good sign.
That's your sitting
up. She was wanting to know, and maybe when you come back, you can share with her. Hopefully, she'll be here. But she was wanting to know if that, in fact, was still in place.
Yes, Senator Morse and Mr. Chair, that program is still happening every Saturday at Eugene Public Library. You can come watch children practicing their reading to the non-critical audience of a trained dog.
That's right.
Okay, great.
There you go.
Well, thank you again very much, Mr. Shepke, and Nan, and Ms. Bennett, and Ms. Elder again.
Thank you.
Consider coming back. Did a great job. So thank you all very much. Obviously, we'll have a work session tomorrow. And I'm right now going to turn it over really quickly to Michelle Deister, who's going to just give a little information on House Bill 2116 for our information.
I just wanted to point out to members of the committee that House Bill 2116 was heard in Policy Committee on Friday. It hasn't been printed yet, but I do believe it went to work session and passed out of that Policy Committee. So this is, as Mr. Shepke said, lays out how the dollars in the Ready to Read program would be distributed and establishes the minimum, which previously was not in statute before. So.
Thank you very much. And tomorrow we will have the work session on Senate Bill 523 plus a report on COP usage. So with that, I'm going to close the hearing.